This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Do you have a starter for Saturday?
No. No.
Will you make that decision tomorrow?
We're going to huddle up after the game here and talk about it, yes.
That is the voice of Craig Counsell. Asked about if they have a starter for Saturday, he said no. Asked if Chris Flexen pitching back-to-back days on Tuesday and Wednesday means he was out of the running to be the starter, no.
No.
And then he said, we'll huddle up and talk about it. And that's the last we've heard from Craig Counsell because the Cubs have the day off. But we are searching for answers and insight. And for that, we go to the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. And joining us there is Chicago Tribune Cubs beat writer Megan Montemurro, CircaLasVegas.com. Megan, thank you for joining us on Rahimi and Harris. Although Layla is not here, Mark Grody will have to do in her stead.
Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure is all of ours. What did you take away from what Craig Counsell had to say in the 24 hours, I guess, since, or I guess 48 hours between that and what will be the start of a series against the New York Mets? What do you think is going to happen with the starting rotation situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at the totality of the situation, like, look, Shota Imanaga is going to be out more than the 15 days that is required being on the IL. And so, you know, if that wasn't the case, then maybe they could get away with only needing one start filled, you know, because of off days. Maybe you try and piece it together some way on Saturday. I just think Cade Horton makes a ton of sense if you're the Cubs to start him Saturday at Citi Field. I know the Mets are a tough lineup. In theory, they could delay it, by a week and have him start at home against the White Sox instead and go with a bullpen day on Saturday, which, you know, if Chris Flexen is still in the mix, that could make sense. But I think it's like, if you look at where the Cubs are at, you know, Cade Horton has been pitching so well at AAA. You know, he's been going six innings. He's been around the 70 pitch mark. They always talk about how you want to promote guys when confidence is high, when they're doing well at AAA, and with how well Cade's been pitching this season, especially over his last four starts. I mean, I think you have to give it a shot and see what he looks like, especially knowing, you know, he's only going to have so many bullets to throw this season after being limited last year with the shoulder injury. So it's an interesting decision and an interesting debate that obviously, as Craig said post-game, they were going to be discussing afterwards. But I think if you're looking at one guy to fill in, I think Cade Horton has to be the guy.
Would the only reason at this point, Megan, that they wouldn't do it is if they would look at the Marlins and or the White Sox and say, meh, that might be a better way to work Cade Horton in?
Yeah, that very well, you know, is part of the discussion as well. Talking to when Jed Hoyer talked to us this week, Tommy Hotovy, Craig Counsell, all of them said, like, sure, you know, in theory, a softer, you know, so-called softer landing spot for a guy making his debut like that, you know, is something you think about. But also, you know, they also all noted, like, this is the big leagues. Like, big league hitters are going to be tougher to get out than AAA hitters, no matter what team they're on. And so, you know, it was also, I think Jed maybe brought up that, you know, if starting on the road can mean less pressure than, you know, if Cade, in theory, were to start at home against Miami or the White Sox. So there's a lot of obviously different factors that you weigh. I mean, I think the big thing is, you know, that they're going to be assessing is how much more development can he accomplish at AAA versus how much can he learn and continue to improve by getting another challenge and facing big league hitters, especially knowing, you know, they're going to, at some point in the season, you know, over the course of it, be watching his workload and assessing that as well. So it's an interesting debate as to what they should do. But I think, you know, with Imanaga out, Cade Horton is their highest upside starting pitcher available. And so, you know, at some point you need to give him a look.
I think the bullets point is an excellent one that you made, Megan, and that's one that I'm certainly looking at, knowing that he's not going to be a guy out here throwing 200 innings this season. He's coming off of a shoulder injury from a year ago, and we know that the Cubs want to get the most out of him, so why not go ahead and get those pitches at the major league level? Because you can tax your bullpen even more if you don't make the right decision here. A guy who has at least shown that he can go 70-plus pitches and go 60 innings. I've been impressed with not only the fact that he hasn't given up that many hits, although it's AAA, not the major leagues, I get that, but that his control has improved so much over the last couple of weeks. So I think you're onto something there. I'll be surprised if it's not Cade Horton, and I'll be very interested in what the explanation is on that. But moving around from the starting position to the back end with the bullpen, Ryan Pressly trying to figure out what they're going to do with him going forward. He says he's healthy, which means it doesn't sound like he's going to the IL or anything, but he doesn't have that swing and miss stuff. How much of a concern is that right now for the Cubs, or is this down the pecking order of issues they have because they have a Porter Hodge who can close immediately, and obviously third base and other areas are things they're working on as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's concerning because when you look at how you would, if you're Craig Counsell, deploy the back end of your bullpen, like you a lot of times are kind of working, you know, backwards as you're plotting out, you know, who you want to face, what pockets of hitters. And, yeah, I mean, you need a closer that can get some swing and miss, especially when you have two strikes, you know, because inevitably runners will get on base. And so there's going to be moments where you need to avoid contact. And his 8% whiff rate is extremely concerning. It's the second lowest of 190 qualified major league relievers this season. And to have that in your closer position, I mean, I think you're obviously playing with fire there. And so, you know, Tommy Hottabee talked to us yesterday about a bunch of different pitching stuff, and obviously Ryan Pressly came up. And, you know, the big thing that he talked about was, you know, he's going to have to be throwing his fastball more up in the zone, that, you know, sometimes his pitch mix lends itself to being in the same lower part of the zone, which obviously makes it more hittable. And then obviously previously his right knee had been bothering him to the point where he had to get it drained, and that cost him a week. And on top of that, you know, Hottabee pointed out that, you know, guys tend to compensate when something's not working right on the lower half. And so bad habits can form. So really it's just like getting back into his consistency. But again, that isn't going to magically necessarily bring more whiffs and strikeouts. And so I think it's really going to be a combination of, you know, getting the mechanics back in form, you know, mixing up where he's throwing certain stuff, especially his fastball. And then something that Hottabee brought up is, you know, he needs to pitch more. You know, some pitchers need to pitch more. And it's something that Pressly had talked about earlier in the year, that he's at his best when he's throwing regularly. Counsell talked about it too, when he struggled, you know, after he struggled in his first two outings. So there could very well be situations going forward where Pressly comes into the game in a non-safe situation, whether they're up or down big. So it does help that they have Porter Hodge, that, you know, if the next day they do need a save situation, they have him available. But it's going to be really interesting to see kind of what they try and do to enhance that swing and miss, because, you know, if this is just not going to go well, you know, over the course of the season, if that doesn't change.
May I offer another name for high leverage, whether the eighth inning or the ninth inning? His name is Ben Brown. He is a starter for the Cubs right now. Is that something that I understand with the two guys down right now? Is it plausible that at some point in time, Ben Brown? Hey, enough with the looks over there, Harris. he's like, what are you talking about, Grody? What about Ben Brown at the end of the bullpen eventually, Megan?
I mean, yeah, maybe at the end of the season, or you get closer there, or if he consistently struggles, to pitch deeper into the games. I just think when you're down Justin Steele for the season, you don't have Shota Imanaga right now. Javier Assad, who's been an incredibly reliable starter the last couple of years, he's down for, at least probably into June, if not July, with his setback from his oblique injury. So you're already seeing some of that starting pitching depth having to be tapped into. And plus, he's had these starts where you look at Milwaukee or what he did against the Dodgers, where, he shows that he can get out some really good hitters and that he can go, six-plus innings into starts, even with only, kind of a two-pitch mix at the moment. And so that's really hard to find, especially guys who throw as hard as he does, as a starter. So if you're the Cubs, you definitely want to explore that and hold on to him as a starter as long as possible. But sure, I could definitely see a scenario as the season progresses where, maybe they decide that getting the most out of him comes in high relief or high leverage relief situations. But I think for now, you need to kind of see what you have as a starter version of Ben Brown.
This call would not be complete with Megan Montemurro, Cubs beat writer from the Tribune, if we did not ask about what's going on over at the Hot Corner. I want Nicky Lopez to just play every day till they figure something else better out, because at least you have a sure-handed defensive third baseman. And people will say, well, Nicky Lopez can't hit. I was like, they haven't been getting a whole lot of hitting there anywhere. At least you know that the third base defense is solved. What do you think is the approach they should be having right now as they wait for Matt Shaw to possibly be ready to come back sometime in the next month or so?
Yeah, I think you have to optimize for defense at that position right now, given the options you have on the big league roster. And, Nicky Lopez certainly has shown not only can he handle routine stuff, he's made some really good plays side to side. His throws have been pretty consistent. I think he definitely warrants consideration. As of, a few days ago, Craig Counsell talked about how, John Birdie will probably get a lot of looks at third still. But, certainly in the series against the Giants, there was some questionable decision-making defensively there by the veteran. So it'll be interesting to see if that balance changes at all. But until Matt Shaw comes up, you really don't have a huge upside offensive profile for third base right now. So it's, with how much they've emphasized defense around the diamond, yeah, it makes sense that, maybe you give Nicky Lopez another start or two per week.
All right, that's Megan Montemurro from the Chicago Tribune. Megan, we appreciate you joining us, and hopefully things will turn around. Cubs and the Cubs and the Mets, the only two teams in baseball without a three-game losing streak this season, and the Cubs will try to preserve that when they take on New York tomorrow.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Megan.
Again, Megan Montemurro, always a great and insight from her as we discuss this big series going up against another team that leads its division in the New York Mets.
Games over 500.
Yeah, they're 10 games over 500. They're 13-3 at home.
That's real.
Tied for the second best record at home of any team in the majors. And earlier this morning with Molly and Haw, WFAN host Evan Roberts was on, right? Talking about a variety of things, including his Brooklyn Nets, who are also trying to jockey for position in week's NBA draft lottery. But he also talked about how the Mets didn't act like a big market team under previous ownership. But now, look at that payroll. They are.
It's surreal because our former owners, the Wilpons, especially over the last decade of their ownership, stopped spending. The Mets became kind of a middle-of-the-market team, and we watched all these great free agents, and the Mets were never involved in any of them. In fact, they lost some of their own, like Jose Reyes and Zach Wheeler. So we went, as Met fans, and remember, sharing a city with the Yankees, where the Yankees will go big-pocket spending. They will go sign Gerrit Cole. They will go sign CC Sabathia. So we went through a decade, not that they were a small-market team, but they didn't act like the big-market team they should. So to go from that to this, like you said, an owner who's genuinely a Met fan, an owner who's not afraid to spend the big bucks, it really is still surreal. He's owned the team for almost 5 years now, And as a Met fan, we're still pinching ourselves that they and we have an owner that is as committed as he is. And signing Juan Soto, especially because we took him away from the Yankees. It wasn't just getting this great young generational player, which is cool enough. It was they took him from the Yankees after he led the Yankees to a freaking World Series berth. So I think the best way to describe these era is for most of us, it is still surreal that we have an owner this committed to winning.
That's a 15-year, $765 million contract they gave to Juan Soto to lure him from across town. I want you to really, 15 years, $765 million contract. Meanwhile, here in Chicago, we're like, please pay $500 million to keep Kyle Tucker because he's good at baseball.
Uh-huh. Well,
how did you feel hearing that?
Well, when I heard that, I was listening to the Mullin Hawes. I was walking in here, and I heard, oh, my God, that sounds very familiar. The past part that he was talking about where he was saying, yeah, you know, it's still they still comport them. They're a big market team. They do spend money, but not like a real big market team. And that's exactly what's been going on with the Chicago Cubs basically since they traded away Yu Darvish. At least that, to me, symbolized what was going on in an obvious payroll dumping when they did that with Yu Darvish. And now, and I understand, look, I mean, it might be on Kyle Tucker that he wants to wait till the end of the season and all that, but there hasn't been a hint that they are putting down $500 million on the board for Kyle Tucker. So, and you know, the interesting part about it is when Tom Ricketts first started with the Cubs, I mean, it was big. It was huge because he's a Cubs fan. He fired Jim Hendry. He brings in Theo Epstein. You got the guy. You got that guy. We always talk about that guy. He brings in Theo Epstein, who then built what was a Cubs team that went to the NLCS three straight years. But they now think that they can continue to do it like that, and that's just not realistic.
And so you wonder if the Cubs are ever going to step into that real big market territory,
right,
or not. I'm not saying they're not spending. They're spending.
Of course.
But the levels, they're not on the first tier. They're on the second tier of spending.
Right. Can you get to that elite level where you are spending the big on these guys, on the five, just call it the $500 to $700 million baseball player that exists, the superstar player?
We know that Toronto was willing to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We know they just paid Vlad.
Yep.
Junior.
Yes.
We know that San Francisco's willing to do it.
Yes.
They offer the money. Obviously, the Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Mets. The Phillies are willing to do it.
Yes.
And so it seems like there's seven teams. Are the Cubs going to be one of those teams? That is the question.
Right. And it'd be a shame if they weren't eventually that. And I heard Tom Ricketts at Cubs convention. He sounded about as frustrated as I've ever heard him in terms of what he's been hearing out, you know, and everybody saying, you know, that you got to get one of these guys. And he sort of cautioned people that don't look at those teams, look at what we're doing and the sensible way of doing things. But I think eventually he's got to get realistic and allow for the money to be spent, like the real money to be spent.
Exhibit A, Kyle Tucker in a Cubs uniform this season.
Yes.
And if you can't get on board with that, here's the thing. If PCA is what a lot of people think PCA is in terms of his ceiling, and he is closer to the ceiling than his floor, much closer to the ceiling, if he becomes a guy who can give you 6+ war seasons, one after the other after the other, you sign him to the first deal, the 9-figure deal, he should be a lifetime Cub, or at least play till, say, age 35
right.
as a Cub.
He's 29 now, right? So
I'm just saying there's certain things that they should be doing with these players that they have not been doing. But Kyle Tucker is the example of you turning the page into the modern baseball competition era. And only time will tell if that actually happens, because I think Kyle Tucker's going to free agency, because that's what people do. People not named Mookie Betts who are with the Dodgers.
Yeah, and I get
Dodgers
that.
Are going to pay you what you want because they're the Dodgers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like we used to talk about the Tez effect, the Montez Sweat effect on the Bears' defense. I mean, Kyle Tucker has had a huge effect.
The Tuck effect.
Absolutely. It has affected everything up and down that lineup. So, I mean, I just don't think that that's a part that you can look at next year and say, yeah, we can do without that. If you want to keep this momentum going and not have this be a one-and-done season, then you got to keep that guy and you got to start acting like the real big boys in Major League Baseball.
Speaking of the big boys, a lot of people have the Chicago Bears as being big boys NFL. Mark Grody, I don't think he's one of them, though. I think he's got him sitting at the kiddie table still.
I just got a caution flag. It's not the kiddie table.
Not the kiddie table? That's wrong analogy. Okay, caution flag.
Waving the flags here. Just hold on.
There was a wreck. Yeah. You don't want to be a part of that wreck. We're going to talk about why Mark Grody is the one pumping the brakes on the Bears hype train this offseason. That's when we come back with more Raheemian Harris, Mark Grody in on 670 The Score.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Raheemy and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
For me, it's to win the division. And I know our division has gotten better and better and more competitive over the last few years. But that's always going to be the goal for us. And then to win championships after that.
Win, 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 win. That's the goal every season. Unfortunately for the Bears, for over a decade plus, it's been nary a winning season. It's happened, but it is far from the norm.
2018, am I right? Last time the Bears had a winning season? I know they've had 500.
Hey, Nate will get you the playoffs sometimes.
Yeah, it did. It did get the Bears to the playoffs, actually.
That is the voice of one Mark Grody. He's here on Raheemy and Harris. Layla with the day off, and we're talking Bears and wins and all of the wins. You can't handle the number of wins that the Bears are about to give you, according to a lot of people. Mark Grody is not one of those people.
Well, I was hurt last year because I was definitely part of the hype train last season. I think when I went through the schedule, I think I came up with 11 wins for the Bears.
Just 11?
11 wins. I know. It's a little embarrassing, being that they ended up having a 10-game losing streak. So I think that I've learned a little bit.
Evolved.
I've evolved a little bit here. And just quickly, part of the reason that you have to be cautious this year, believe it or not, is the head coach of the Chicago Bears.
First-time head coach,
Ben Brown. So there is the unknown, like, I'm
Ben
pretty
Johnson.
Sure. What did I say?
Ben Brown.
Oh, man.
But that's because you want Ben Brown to win as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But Ben Johnson is a new coach. I think he's going to be a good head coach. I think he's going to be a good, you know, play caller, as you said. I mean, there's no reason, but we don't know for sure. And history also says around the NFL, oftentimes first-year head coaches just ain't got it at first. A lot of times the roster is not completely put together. And I went back and looked at all the Bears head coaches since Neil Armstrong, and every one of them was, none of them, I should say, except for Matt Nagy in 2018, had a winning record. Like Neil Armstrong in 1978, his first year, 7-9. Mike Ditka, 3-6, mini Bears. They were in Ditka's second year, they were 8-8 for whatever that's worth. 1993, Dave Wanstead, 7-9 his first year. Dick Geron's first year, 1999, 6-10. Lovie Smith's first year, a terrific Bears head coach. Lovie Smith, 5-11 in his first year. Mark Trestman, 8-8, and then went downhill after that. 2015, John Fox, 6-10 his first year. Matt Nagy, the outlier, 12-4. 2022, Flus, 3-14. Steve Rosenblum got the ball rolling a little bit on this topic too, because he said, he asked me live on the air, if the Bears were to be 9-8 but didn't make the playoffs, is that okay? And I said, hell yes, that is okay, just because of all the losing.
It's a winning season.
It's a winning season.
And it's a first-year head coach, and it's a second-year quarterback. Also, I would say that Ben Johnson is set up better than a lot of those coaches you just named in terms of roster, talent.
Probably.
And the situation is calling for more than some of those records that you
Yeah, I agree. There's probably some texture that would need to be given to look at all of those rosters. It certainly appears that he is set up to succeed. But I'm with you, of course. 9-8, you take it. This is a team that has had 2 10-game losing streaks in the last 3 years or so. But There are examples of people going overboard at this time. Let me bring you some of the audio as some of the proof here. Joe Ostrowski was on The Score last week on this very program, and here's what he had to say about the Chicago Bears and where the betting is going.
They're doing it again.
Well, what exactly are they doing?
Doing it again.
Wishcasting and moving the money line in ways that shouldn't happen.
So I got my first report from BetMGM. Some win totals are already moving. They're saying, okay, we got the most popular bets. Oh, take a wild guess. Of all 32 NFL teams, which team has received the most amount of bets on the over? Can anybody guess? They're doing it again. They haven't received enough pain when the under has hit in 11 of the last 12 years.
That's crazy.
They're betting the Bears over 8.5. That is the most popular win total bet. Oh, and just moments ago, guys, because I knew this was going to come up, I was like, you know what? I wonder what Ben Johnson is for the coach of the year. Let me see what Ben Johnson is for the coach of the year. He is the favorite. Ben Johnson is your favorite for the coach of the year. The Bears are the most bet team on the over 8.5 for wins. And I rewind to exactly 1 year ago. You know who the favorite was for the coach of the year last year, guys?
Matt Eberflus.
It was Matt Eberflus. So we're doing it all again. Not enough pain.
He's doing it again. I mean, Joe O laid it out.
Layla laughed, and then she said she had the over. The under. I want to be very clear on that. 11 out of the last 12 years, the under is it. I want you to really process that. 11 out of the last 12 seasons, the Bears over under, the under has hit.
The only exception being 2018.
Yes.
Yes.
That weird,
they won 12
weird,
games.
That's right. And Matt Nagy was coach of the year that year. So
it can happen.
We are out of control again in the month of May. We haven't
Who's we? You're saying the bettors?
I guess I'm just talking about Bears Nation as a collective. I guess I just put myself in the nation. I don't know if I'm allowed to do that.
No, you're in.
But Bears. Yes, everybody. And we have not even had the rookie minicamp. We're 1 day away from rookie minicamp. We're almost there.
We're not there.
We've seen nothing. And guess what? There could be. I had a great talk last night with Carmen Vitale of Fox Sports, who covers the NFC North. She's so good. And she thinks that Ben Johnson is going to be good. She feels pretty optimistic, but she pointed out that in the first seven games on Ben Johnson's watch as an offensive coordinator in Detroit, the Lions were 1-6. Things got better. So in other words, just to point out that it could take a minute for this all to look the way Ben Johnson wants it to look and the way everybody else wants it to look.
First year head coach, second year quarterback. I thought that was pretty clear the way I laid that out.
Yeah. Yes. That is well said. Yes. Second year quarterback, that adds to this as well. And then just the great unknowns on the Bears. We went through the whole explosive runs things earlier, and we both agreed. Do we know that they could stop the run this year?
No.
It seems like they have better personnel and that it would be trending that way, but we don't know.
No.
We don't know if Grady Jarrett, Shamar Turner, and Dio Dangbo are going to make a difference in the run. Probably, but we don't know.
Also, I guarantee you this, players will get hurt. Do you have the depth? Right. I would argue they do not have the depth.
Right. Don't tell me that Andrew Billings, because Andrew Billings goes out, well, it was Andrew Billings' fault. You can't be that fragile. You cannot be that fragile as a team. So I got to see that. We do still have to see the offensive line work. And I'm probably complicit in this, but we've just assumed that Dolman, Tooney, and Jackson are going to be, like, you don't have to worry about them, right? They're the good kid. They're fine. We don't have to worry about them. There's not going to be any issues whatsoever. But we don't know that.
Anytime you have a family of five, and that's what I consider an offensive line, a family of five.
Yeah, that's right.
Some of the kids you know are going to get the job done.
Right.
Some you're, I don't know. And then there's always that one kid. That one kid right now is Ozzie Trapillo. And you're hoping that Jackson is not one of those kids. He's the positive influence of a Drew Dolman and a Tooney and a Darnell Wright will impact him in a way which allows the family to... Every family is dysfunctional.
Absolutely.
There's always going to be a black sheep.
I mean, Nate Davis, you know? Like,
he's gone.
He can't hurt us anymore.
He can't hurt you anymore.
He can't go play ping pong ball.
The ghost of Nate Davis cannot haunt.
Did I ever tell you that Nate Davis story about when I was trying to interview him last year?
What happened?
So, like, you know, obviously, like, Nate Davis wasn't talking. He wasn't playing. And so every day I would be like, you know, a couple days anyway, I'd be like, hey, you want to talk? No, no, no. And then finally, I went up to him another day. I was like, "Hey, Nate, can we talk? Can I interview you?" And he puts his hand on my shoulder. And he goes, "Sorry, man, I'm going to play ping pong right now."
Did you report this when it happened?
I did, and I honestly laughed. I thought it was like, you know, just sort of an exasperation.
How deep into the season were we when this
was
happened?
Late? This is late. Into
this
the
is
season.
When it was all over.
It was all over.
Okay. Okay.
And he even smiled. Like, he knew what he was saying to me. He knew that I was trying to talk. So I actually thought that was funny. So my last interaction with him, I find to be positive.
I got
to
go play ping pong.
I got to go.
You just said, can I join you?
Yeah, it's with the look on his face, and he just puts his hand up. I got to go play ping pong. I'm like, okay, I respect what you just did.
Is Nate Davis worse than Velus Jones Jr.? Is that worse than Chase Claypool?
That's a
Where
great
does
question.
Nate Davis rank in
the failed
musings of one Ryan Poles?
Wow, that's such a great question. I love that.
I think he's at the bottom. I'm pretty sure he's at the bottom.
Okay, so you're putting Chase Claypool and Velus Jones ahead because you give up a second rounder to get Chase Claypool. A third round pick was Velus Jones.
Yeah, that's why Claypool's below Velus Jones Jr. in terms of he's a bigger problem than Velus Jones.
Okay,
Jr.
So you've got Chase Claypool as the biggest problem, and then
Nate Davis first.
Okay, number one
problem.
Okay, number one problem. Okay,
then Chase Claypool, second round pick.
Okay,
and then Velus Jones Jr.
Okay,
and there might be something in between two and three that I'm not thinking of off the top of my head.
Yeah,
but it's bad.
Yeah, probably. I mean, like, we really get into it, like. But this is different, like getting rid of letting Roquan Smith go. I mean, like, if we want to talk about mistakes on the watch, like, has Tremaine, I mean, they're talking about putting TJ Edwards.
Yeah,
in the
I would say that's probably worse than Velus Jones Jr., but not as bad as Chase Claypool.
Yeah.
I would also say Jalen Carter's below there, but it's also probably a top five.
See, I can't like be a hypocrite here. At the time that the Jalen Carter thing happened, I was okay with it because the Bears locker room just didn't have, like, the Eagles had the support, right?
Guess what?
What?
That should have been your first clue that this thing wasn't going to work out.
Yeah, if the Bears didn't have the support.
But they were
in an admitted rebuilding stage, though, like, where they're just, you know, here's Byron Pringle, come on down.
But if you're in an admitted rebuilding stage and you can't establish the culture before you, that wasn't Matt Eberflus's first season. That was going into a second season.
No, you're right. Absolutely.
You had a year to lay it down, lay down the foundation.
But they had a 10-game losing streak.
Now give me a big screen TV that takes up the whole room. That's what Jalen Carter would have been. Yeah. No, you settled for a modest TV that you could still put on a coffee stand.
Are you saying that we wouldn't be talking about the Amari DiMarcado 53-yard run if Jalen Carter was on the Chicago Bears?
We'd be talking about quarterbacks in pain, which is what I told you I wanted to hear about.
We'd be talking about more than 40 sacks? Oh.
As a team, yes.
God. Yeah.
Yeah, right down the line.
It's a tough
one. Right down the line.
Yeah.
Will the Bears give up more sacks than they give? You tell me.
Will they give up more sacks? So they gave up. So Caleb got sacked 68 times last year.
40.
They had 40 sacks against the quarterback. The answer is I don't know. I don't know.
Well, none of us know. But
I don't know.
You're
I know.
Guess.
I know. Educated guess. I think that, shoot. I think the Bears will have, the defense will have, I'm going to say they're going to have 57 sacks next year.
57?
And you ready for this? Are you ready for this? Because Dennis Allen. Because I think Dennis Allen is going to get creative. And you know what? Matt Eberflus was a decent defensive coordinator. He did some dialing up of Kyler Gordon and Tremaine Edmonds and TJ Edwards. But so the sack numbers are going to go up. So I'm going to say that Caleb will be sacked 58 times. They'll go from 68 to 58. He's still going to get sacked a decent amount.
Make sure I got this right. 58 to 57.
Yeah.
58 sacks given up, 57 sacks recorded.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you think?
No, I'm just, I think that the numbers will be closer. I don't know if it'll be that good.
Yeah.
Wow, 58, 57. I think they will give up less than 40 sacks. Give up less than
really?
40 sacks.
Okay.
So I guess I do think they will have more sacks than sacks given up.
Okay. Yeah, I was trying to process that in my brain, just the question, too.
No. Yeah. It's an interesting question because it was so lopsided last year. 68 sacks given up, and then you only record 40 sacks.
Right.
That's...
Right, with Montez Sweat leading the way with 5.5, Jervon Dexter with 5, and then I think TJ Edwards, maybe? Like, you don't necessarily, and that's what I mean, like, they'll use guys like that. And I just really, we are leaning on Dennis Allen to make this all work for the Bears defense.
I think 57 is ambitious.
Yeah.
You know why?
Why?
That would have been second in the league last year behind Denver's 63.
Wow. So I just, in the midst of a we're out of control Bears segment, I just gave the Bears 57.
Yeah, that's where we're going to leave that one. I'll let Layla deal with that with you tomorrow.
I'll definitely drop
you're
that.
You're doing the Grody hit and run now. You're just leaving chaos here.
I'm definitely leaving
you
the chaos.
You are just leaving
you,
it for
you know what's
us.
Real chaos?
What?
Is when someone puts their money where their mouth is. You know, we saw Paul Pierce and we saw Keyshawn Johnson. And we saw Joy Taylor on Speak dealing with Jalen Johnson, and he's saying if he accomplishes his goal of the 3 touchdowns, defensive touchdown, he was pointing at his wrist, he'll get him some new wrist wear.
Uh-huh.
That's what Keyshawn Johnson was saying to Jalen Johnson.
Oh, okay.
Meanwhile, Paul Pierce gets in his sport, in his element, and he writes a check with his mouth that his feet ended up having to cash. We'll explain when Raheemian Harris with Mark Grody continues on 670 The Score.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Layla Raheemi, Marshall Harris, Raheemian Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
We are back with some breaking news here on Raheemian Harris. Mark Grody in. Breaking news on The Score brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. You know who's going to be creating memories this weekend? That would be Kate Horton because he's going to get his big league call-up joining the team in New York. That's according to Tommy Birch, who covers the Iowa Cubs for the Des Moines Register and USA Today Network. So, Kate Horton, there's your answer.
There
He's
it is.
Coming up.
It's the Pope effect. It's all happening.
Presumably getting the start on Saturday against the Mets in Shota Imanaga's stead, since he's on the injured list with a hamstring injury. And that's big news because now you have that slot in the rotation covered, and now the Cubs can see what they have in Kate Horton at the major league level. I think this is a win for all parties involved.
Yep, he's been excellent at Iowa. There really was no other option in terms of who deserves it and who should be starting at this point. I've been won over on that. Jameson Taillon to go tomorrow night. Hopefully it is. Cade Horton on Saturday and Matthew Boyd on Sunday is what we're looking at in terms of the Cubs starters in New York against the Mets, which you could hear right here on 670 The Score.
Okay, so the Cubs news that's big as they try to avoid their first three-game losing streak of the season. They've got the day off today, but as Mark said, they resume business, if you will, at Citi Field in New York. Meanwhile, we had basketball last night, another classic. Knicks coming back from 20 down for the second straight game on the road in Boston. I want y'all to hear what Paul Pierce said on FS1's Speak before the game about his Celtics.
If the Celtics lose game two at home, I promise you, I'm walking here tomorrow.
Why you got to do that?
Wait a minute.
I'm walking here 15 miles. I'm walking here.
I don't know, Pete. This is your friend.
In my robe.
Get your friends.
No shoes on.
Somebody save him.
Bare feet.
No.
If what?
If the Celtics lose tonight.
Oh, my God.
Oh, don't do it, Paul.
I'm walking.
Paul.
Not tonight.
I'm telling you right now.
Take the series.
No,
nah,
I'm taking the series.
Not tonight.
Ain't no way. In a row, barefoot.
So you getting up at 5 in the morning?
I'm going to be up at 3.
Keyshawn Johnson tried to talk him out of it. He said, no, just change it to they're going to win the series. Don't do that to yourself.
Now walk it off.
Now walk it out. Paul Pierce posted on social media today in a robe on foot documenting the start of his walk to the FS1 studios.
Is he really doing it?
Listen to this.
This is crazy, dog. I can't believe this. C's got me out here like this, bro. I'm sweating. So I'm about like 4 miles in right now. So I think I got like another 16 miles. I've been going for about an hour and a half right now. So, all right, I keep going, baby. I'm a man of my word, though.
Paul's going to have to figure out the pace. Wow. I don't know a whole lot, but 4 miles in an hour and a half. Now,
is he barefoot? Did he say?
I don't think he's barefoot.
Is he wearing his
barefoot
robe?
Barefoot is asking. He had a robe on.
Okay.
He had a robe on walking down the street.
We don't want him to get hurt.
He's got the robe on. He had the shades on, too, from the very early morning.
Any footwear? Did you be able to see that?
I did not see the footwear.
All right.
We want you to encourage you to bring footwear if you were to go to a Cubs game, because that's what you would need is footwear, probably headgear as well.
Unless you were of the earth.
If you tune in tomorrow morning to Mullion Hall from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m., and then our show from 10 to 2 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Cubs versus the Marlins.
Nice, Bears.
At Wrigley Field next Wednesday night, May 14th. This is provided by Bosch Power Tools. The more you Bosch, the more you feel like a Bosch. Got that?
Yeah. Get some tickets. By the way, didn't Stephen A. Smith do something similar to Paul Pierce? Didn't he say he would quit his job if somebody won a game or something like that?
I think that was, who's the guest Stephen A. has on every Wednesday? Mad Dog, right?
You're right, Chris Russo.
Yeah.
It was. You're absolutely right. It was Mad Dog Russo, and that he had to totally, like, he was pretty sincere.
He's like, I'll quit my job, but then he just came on a green screen with the beach and acted like he quit his job. But guess what? He ain't quit his job.
Yeah, it must have been a baseball thing.
He did not quit his job.
Yeah, and he was pretty like, that tells you what the hot takes really are. Mm-hmm.
No, seriously. So the big news of the day, I think we can all say this, Cade Horton's coming up to the Cubs.
Yes.
He of the 33 strikeouts in 29 innings, I think that's the one.
I got it right here for you, buddy. He has a 1.24 ERA over six starts for Iowa. Actually, I don't have the strikeouts. But
okay.
I think the 1.24 ERA over six starts was pretty good.
He's given up 12 hits in 29 innings, and he struck out 33 while walking 13, but he's only had one walk in each of his last three starts.
Yeah. Yes. And if that's not enough for you, PCA, going back to New York. It'll be interesting to see how Mets fans greet PCA when he gets announced out there.
I feel like he didn't get high enough in the system for them to like really care that much.
No, but you're probably right, but it's just sort of what he represents. That was the, for people, that was the Javier Baez trade.
Maybe they'll pat him on the head like Evan Roberts was patting Cubs fans on the head.
Yeah, well, I get it, too. Like, really, if you're the Mets, you've gotten, except for the year 1984 when the Cubs beat the Mets in the old National League East, 69 was a disaster in 2015. You know, even though the Cubs were kind of just, it was a revelation that the Cubs made it to the NLCS in 2015. They got their asses kicked by the Mets in 2015 in the NLCS.
It's 2015. Is that when was that the Subway Series?
Was it? Was it Mets Yankees in the World Series that year?
2015?
Yeah.
It was Mets Royals.
Mets Royals.
The Royals won. I knew the Mets didn't win. I was just trying to remember who they lost.
That's when they had Matt Harvey and I think Noah Syndergaard, but they just pitched the hell out of it.
The Dark Knight, yes.
I
remember.
Yes.
Ben Zobrist won the World Series that year with the Royals.
Yes.
That's right.
A lot of good things.
Living his best life.
Okay, so that's going to do it for us by ourselves, but we're going to have company. When we come back, it's transition time with Matt Spiegel and Lawrence Holmes.